Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
All right, you know what? Fuck it. I'm leaving this. I'm going to leave chat for like 10 minutes. I'm going to go fucking play this on my Xbox. I'll be back.
I'll just bump it to Thursday.
Thank you. Thank you for the... Oh, God. I can't even fucking quit out. Jesus. What the fuck?
Jing vagina.
Hey, Pernell.
LBRB together.
Hello.
Pernell came in at perfect time.
Oh my God!
I thought someone just said, "Hey, Pernell." Like, I assume he just heard saw my name pop up.
Oh, then you missed the two words that immediately preceded that.
What Fuck were me. They?
Raging vagina.
Oh.
Oh. Somebody called. I didn't even work. Like, somebody called. No.
Call the rager.
Somebody called. Somebody say raging vagina. Here I am.
My wrestling name.
One night.
In this corner, the raging vagina.
Why would that be your wrestling name?
Why not? Because he's a pussy.
And I'm raging.
You're just giving her the ammo at this point.
Yeah, a little bit.
You're just like, hey, Aki, I feel like you've been a little low on the ammunition. So here you go. My wrestling name is Raging Vagina. Have fun with it.
The free one, yeah, it's a free one. All right, you know, it's Tuesday. I'm being nice about it.
Mm-hmm. You
know. That probably would be Aki's wrestling name, though. You think about
Raging
it.
Vagina?
Yeah.
Nah, she'd come up with some sort of weeb shit, like named after whatever her fucking Gunpla models.
Raging Weeb Vagina. I kid because I love and I love the sleep.
Yeah, it would definitely be some weeb shit. Yeah, you're
fucking
right.
Fucking knew it. Yeah, exactly. I mean, Joe, what would your wrestling name be? There's no way that you haven't thought about this.
I really haven't because I wouldn't want to be a wrestler. Dude, have you seen what they do to themselves?
Oh, yeah, I know. But, like, as a kid, you as a kid watching wrestling, like, you didn't ever, like, you know, oh, in this corner is Joe Cam. Like, you never had, like, you know, that kind of shit?
I mean, I painted my face and stuff, but we just made pretend we were, like, the Ultimate Warrior and Hulk Hogan.
Okay.
We didn't make up our own characters.
No.
Okay. We were boring. Plus, I mean, do your face paint as Ultimate Warrior. What more do you need?
I mean, to be honest, I figured you would have done one of the Road Warriors.
I had a rock band idea as a kid. Hard, heavily armed rockin' dudes.
Ooh, that sounds cool.
There's a free one to use, kids.
Heavily armed rockin' dudes. Oh, yeah, it spells hard.
Yeah, hard, H-A-R-D, and it was all metallic. It would have been awesome.
Heavily armed rockin' dudes.
And we're hard. Sounds
take name while being hard
I was
gay.
A child, you moron. That wasn't even like entering into the equation.
Yeah, only you, at the time when people were kids, the only time gay entered the equation when people were being jerks and trying to insult people stupidly.
Jacob, you deviant.
Deviant.
I had a friend growing up who pretty much a lot of people just kind of assumed was gay. Like, I'm not gay. And I'm like, I don't care either way. Let's play games. I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was only the people who wanted to be assholes that were like making a big deal. You're gay. Hurt. Like, so what? What if he was? Doesn't matter to me. The important part is, do you like Super Mario Brothers 3? That answer is very important. And if it's no, go fuck yourself.
Yeah, I got to keep all this. What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe, the lead singer of Hard. Joining on backup is the deviant Jacob Garner, raging vagina Aki, And she didn't get a name for Purnell.
Smash-tacular. I don't know.
Chocolate Thunder Purnell is here.
I'll take it. I'll take it.
And no, chocolate hammer.
No, Chocolate Thunder. It's Chocolate Thunder. That is it. And if somebody brings up Richard Pryor and Sexual Chocolate, I'm saying that was my name also, but that doesn't fit for wrestling as much. So, no.
I mean, there already was a Sexual Chocolate in wrestling, Mark Henry.
Wait, also, was there?
I mean, like,
yeah.
Well, he got that from Eddie Murphy for sure.
Chocolate Thunder is what I have when I eat too much Taco Bell.
That's not chocolate. That's no chocolate.
But it's thunder, all right.
It's a lot of thunder. Kaboom.
And the flashes he sees before his eyes on the toilet, that's the lightning.
The Braille Bastion.
I see my grandparents calling to me.
It's time, Jacob.
Put down the burrito, Jacob.
I feel like, thank God.
My rectum
finally misses, off of this, bitch. Peace.
Rectum misses comfort. Oh, mercy. How's everybody doing, though, in a general sense? Like, you play, get any good games aside from the review stuff, which is yet to be determined?
I mean, like, I'm still playing yet another zombie Survivors, which I reviewed last week. I'm still addicted to that game.
And you were quoted on their Blue Sky.
I felt what very was the special. Quote? I had sent Joe a message at 4 a.m, being like, fuck, I don't even have
it. I don't think that's going to get quoted. Jacob, oh, fuck. There it is. That's the quote. Oh, fuck.
But it was something like, you know, I can say that this is the most addictive game of 2026. And, like, there's a timestamp of 4:01 a.m. from when I sent it.
Yeah.
And it's a clip of an email. My kids had school the next day, and like we have to get up at like 6:30 in the morning. And then I had work, and it was just, oh my God, that was awful.
If you're stuck at school and the zombie apocalypse kicks in, you're going to be glad I played this game all night.
Yeah, their picture that they shared is like a screenshot of the game, and then a clip of my email over top that says, "Hi, not sure if your team is looking for quote box quotes or anything for launch. But my co-host left me this message at 4 a.m. and I took a screen cap of his Facebook message at 4:01 a.m.
Still playing the game. I got to get my kid to school.
He's like, well, I can easily say that yet another Zombie Survivors is the most addictive game I've played this year. And
it's killing me.
They were thrilled. Len, thank you for the follow. How are you doing tonight? I want to give a shout out to Jordan for subbing earlier before we went live, and the accidental punchers who rated us earlier before we got into our discussion on things. How's everyone's week? How's Purnell? How was your board game night?
I went pretty well. We actually had a decent turnout. I ended up playing a game with a kid who, he's not really a kid, like in his early 20s, but he's got energy for days. Keeps me on my toes, but he's a good guy. So whenever he gets excited about playing a game, hey, Perna, you got to play this game with him. I'm like, okay, let's figure it out. We end up gaming, but it takes a lot of energy out of me. But it was a good time. We played Mercurial, which is a tableau builder. We got about maybe, I feel like we got like 30 people or so. And the guy at the bar was like, yeah, you guys bring good business on Tuesday nights. We think we're glad to have you here. And I was like, thank you. We're glad to be here. My travel went good. No delays. The first time, and I don't even know how long, I went on a trip with no delays either direction.
Where'd you go this time?
I went to Seattle to visit my friend. I haven't seen him since his baby shower, and now he has a son 4 years later. So I was like, I've yet to meet your kid, and I haven't seen you in 4 years. We should remedy that. So
I just have to make a shower since then.
Oh, technically the child was counted in fetal juices at the time, so showering wasn't even the equation. But now, yes, many showers have been, more like baths have been taken. He's a happy little kid, very hose friendly. Downs. Yeah, hose downs. Uncle Pern has been established in that circle now. I got to go to the town that Twin Peaks was filmed in, which was cool. So I went to the diner and the hotel that it took that had, there were sets in the show, and the waterfall from the opening, and went on a nice hike. That was fun. Counted five black people in the entire town, so that was good.
And you were number six.
That's right. Oh,
good job, Bruno. You made him use a second hand.
And though obviously it didn't, I didn't get to go inside or nothing, it was pure coincidence with no intent. We stopped to, my friend drives an electric car, so we pulled over to a lot that had, that was an outlet that had car chargers in it. And sure enough, I look across the way from the charge station and saw like Nintendo of America sitting there, which I don't think was their headquarters because it wasn't in Redmond. It was near Redmond. But it had a big Nintendo sign, South Fork, blah, 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 and a gate that wouldn't open for me. So I took it for what it was and took a picture.
You didn't knock. You're like, hello, I'm home.
I'm home. Let me in. It's me, the real Mario. I'm the real Mario. Let me in. I like the spaghetti. Not being a racial stereotype. I'm just a Mario. Who I guess is also a racial stereotype, but I'm being Mario, not the stereotype.
Yeah.
So, but it was a nice trip. I like Seattle quite a bit, although the city itself is too rich for my blood. 2,000 square feet house for $1.5 million. Yeah, no. That place is that sounds very
disgusting.
Yeah,
I mean, have you tried digging around in your couch cushions?
I did. I only came up with $750,000, so not quite there.
Damn.
I tried so couches. Hard. Well, I mean, there's only have one couch, so.
Buy another couch and then check that one.
Yeah.
Find a used couch. Have you guys scoured this couch yet? Well, actually, no, give it to me. How much is the couch? $500. Surely I'll find $250,000 in this couch. Yeah, I'll buy that. Give it to me. Yeah, baby. But no, it's a good city to visit, though. And I enjoyed the views I got. Lots of steep hills and trees and water, marinas. People bringing halibut from Alaska back. Saw sea lions eating salmon. It was cool. A lot of fun.
Very good. Aki, what about you? How was your week?
It was pretty good. I got some model kits in. I built some model kits. I decided I wasn't going to buy any more of one type of model kit. Otherwise,
how long until you change your mind and decide to buy that model kit?
Oh, I'm not. I'm not buying any model kits from a specific company unless it's to finish one of the collections I've already started.
Why would they do
that?
Because the quality of their kits are just inferior to the other ones that I've been getting as of late, and I'm just not willing to waste the money on them anymore.
That's fair. I mean, you're spending a lot of money on stuff. You want to get good quality.
Yeah, and I've bought a lot of the kits from the company that I'm no longer buying from anymore. Like, I have around 200 kits from that company, and I'm just like,
they piss you off?
No, they didn't particularly piss me off. I just, you know, I those were the first ones I ever built, so I just kept buying a bunch of those. And then I got kits from some other companies, and I built a bunch of those all in a row. And then I went back to the old stuff to build a couple of the newer ones I got, and I was like, oh, this feels like cheap shit in my hands. Bad
business practices. They use cheap parts.
They might, cheaper anyways, but it was just, I was like, you know, building this isn't as fun as it is the other ones. The material feels significantly shittier. And it costs typically a little bit more. So I'm just not going to buy these anymore unless it's the finished collection that I've already started. Like,
no.
But otherwise, like, I had a whole bunch of other groups that I was going to buy from this to create more collections. I'm just like, I'm not going to start those because I don't want to spend more money on this. It sucks. It sucks.
Well, now you can spend that money on other stuff.
Yeah, I will like inevitably. Huh?
Like hookers and blow.
Yeah.
I will, one of the
or on shipping
costs. I will inevitably spend that money on just a different style of fucking kit because I'm a loser. Which is fine because that's what I've been spending that money on recently. Because anyways.
You're a loser, would you rather spend it on the hookers and blow? I mean, come on, you're doing fine.
Probably I'm healthier. Downplaying
yourself. Yeah.
It's healthier than good blow.
Yeah, I realistically what I should be doing is just not spending it.
I get that.
Because one, I've run out of room. I ran out of room a while ago. I have like 30, 40 kits that are finished and just sitting in their boxes right now because I don't have shelving room for them. And I still got like another 50-ish kits that I haven't started building. And I have a bunch that I've ordered that haven't come in yet. So,
well, I mean, it sounds like you get more of the oomph from the build, not the keep. Like, couldn't you flip some?
I could, but I'm a hoarder. I rarely ever get rid of anything I've ever bought, ever, honestly.
I just sold something this week.
Nice.
What'd you sell?
I sold my Gears of War Lancer.
Again?
What do you mean again? I only ever had one.
That electronic one, right?
The taxi-colored one.
Huh?
Danny taxi,
the yellow and black, the big giant Lancer.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah, but you used to have that electronic one that like I lusted after and somebody else bought it off of you for like 150 or something like that, like years ago.
Oh, God, I don't remember. There's so many years of my life I legit have. It's a black hole.
I think what he's telling you is he sold it, then bought it again. And he
didn't buy it again. If I had one, it was a different one.
Yeah, that one had like blood stains on it. And like you pulled the trigger and it made like a few noises and vibrated.
This one did too.
Maybe he had two of them. Even before the first sale, and he didn't know.
Possible. Ashley asked me the same thing. Did you have one before? I'm like, not that I remember. Maybe I did. Fuck.
Lancer.
It happens. Indigo.
Shipping on those sons of bitches is insane, by the way.
Oh, yeah. No way.
You didn't have to pay it.
I'm not surprised.
The important part is you didn't have to pay it.
Well, I agreed to cover half.
What? Man, they paying all that shit. You buy my Lancer, you can pay for that shipping, too.
Well, it's not like I had many offers to sell the Lancer. So.
Touché. But do you think the offer to pay half contributed to why they bought it at all?
Probably, yeah. Because we didn't know what it would... We didn't know what it would run, so I gave him a quote, and in the end, I ended up covering about half.
What was the cost to ship it? Like, $50?
$120.
Oh, God.
To ship it to Texas.
Yeah, that's shipping in a nutshell now, ladies. It makes you wonder about those spend $100, get free shipping situation that we got at some stores.
Yeah.
They must have something special going on, because otherwise, I don't know how they're doing that.
Is sick.
Hmm? Oh, yeah.
I said that taxi paint job is sick.
Yeah, it was okay. There's another new one they just came out with that's $300.
Jesus.
Yeah. The taxi one wasn't even worth that much. I got like $140 for it and $60 shipping.
Every time you say taxi, I'm thinking about Danny DeVito and what was that dude?
It was yellow and black styled after a taxi cab.
Yeah.
No, I know that. Cool. I'm just thinking about the show Taxi.
Yeah.
And Andy Kaufman was in it?
Yeah.
Yeah, so was Michael Richards.
Wow. Before the scandal.
And Judd Hirsch.
Mm-mm-mm.
So, Jacob, how was your week? Or your weekend?
Not as bad as Michael Richards.
Weekend. I had the wedding. My niece got married on Friday.
Congratulations.
Yeah, that was a really nice wedding. Ate well. Had a few drinks. You know, danced a little. It was really nice.
Did you dance in your sandals?
No, I've got special shoes.
Did your dog fuck your shoes?
You know, to be honest, maybe, I don't know. I haven't seen him since the wedding.
Jacob's dog did not fuck his shoe.
Anyway.
Yeah, we have a sound clip for that now, bitches. Jacob's dog did not fuck his shoe.
Anyway.
Dumbass.
Saturday was recovery, and then I had to work Sunday, so. Yeah.
I like the bark sound effect. I'm proud of that one.
Hmm.
I wonder if Outright listened to that yet.
Did you post it?
I shared it with them.
Okay.
I didn't post it on their Discord, but I shared it with them on Discord, and I didn't warn them. I did not say it's clean. Normally I say, as usual, it's clean from here to the end. I did not make that distinction this time. Technically, it's clean because it was censored. It's just improper.
Indeed.
Yes. But they gave us Walking Dead, so yay. We get to cover that.
Yeah.
Yay. Wait, is it another Walking Dead game?
It's an
came
older
out last
one.
Last year.
Yeah, actually 2 years ago.
Really? I thought it was just last year. Oh, really? Yeah. Wait, 23?
Yep.
That's
three years ago. Oh, crap. Dude, we're getting old.
No way it came out 3 years ago.
I'm pretty sure that's the one that was 23. I don't know what other games I have that would have come out
Walking
in 23.
Walking Dead Destinies. There we go. Release date. Oh my god, you're right. November 17th, 2023. Yep. Jesus, what the fuck?
Time flies. And also, Walking Dead hasn't been relevant in some time, so it makes sense. Unless you're talking about that. The new one.
Just finished watching it this morning. We watched the final episode.
Of the original or of the Dead City or whatever?
Of The Walking Dead. The 1 through 11 seasons. She started it recently. I'm like, oh god, why are you watching this? It gets so shitty in the middle.
I don't even feel like it got shitty so much as I just wasn't happy about certain people's stuff. So, and then I was like,
when the momentum stopped,
I just kind of... I didn't mind that because it was comic related. It did what it was supposed to do from the comic standpoint, though people hated it when it happened in the comic,
no,
too.
No, I wasn't mad at who died. I was mad at how the show handled it. I was mad that they went to a cliffhanger ending, so you have to wait a fucking
for the whole
8 months
season
for them to do a new season. And then as soon as the episode started, they did a different story and they didn't resolve it.
Wait, no, they didn't. The first episode was them going through the whole when they. Let me make sure I remember. You're talking about the cliffhanger when they got pulled over on the side of the road when they all got pulled over by Negan's caravan.
Like everyone fucking knows who dies in this.
No, I know. I'm saying, I'm confirming the cliffhanger you're talking about was when the caravan pulled them all over.
Is when episode one of the next season started. They did not immediately address who was killed. They showed other stuff. Maybe it wasn't a different story.
They showed the post trauma and stuff, and they walked.
And then they did walk back. Like, that pissed me off. I felt that insulted my intelligence, and I stopped watching that episode.
Oh wow!
Yeah, I didn't watch it again after that.
First person that responded with that.
I don't like when a show insults my intelligence and treats me like an idiot. It's like, just don't drag this out. Just show me respect what you have set up with a cliffhanger and resolve your cliffhanger.
If I'm not mistaken, though, it all happened at the end by the end of the actual episode. So you got your resolution.
Oh, you got the resolution eventually, but
during the same episode, I'm saying
they took too long for me. And then some of the other decisions they made in the show after that just reinforced what I didn't want to stick with it. But Ashley rewatching it, I would just like catch episodes off the side and watch a bit here and there. And Things did pick up again with the Whispers and the Commonwealth, so it was...
Yeah, the Whispers were a crazy narrative, even in the comic.
I will say, it is funny that they had Negan on for how long, and they would not write any F-bombs into the show, and then for the final 8 episodes, the final chunk of their season of the series, they threw in like an F-bomb every episode.
I guess they figured the show's done. What are they holding on for?
Well, there might have also been rules.
Oh, I know that there were the rules were relaxed, but the fact that they didn't do it for so long and then just for the last few episodes, like, you didn't need them.
It's like
Community throwing two in their final season. You didn't need them.
Well, the Simpsons movie had Marge Simpson curse, and people were like, oh, wow, there it is. But the joke was that, hey, they're going to do it eventually because it's a movie, and they're allowed one. When is it going to happen? And it was, there it is. That's the curse. And it worked.
Wait, did Marge say fuck?
Yeah. You never saw the Simpsons movie?
I saw the movie. I don't remember her saying fuck.
Yeah, she basically said, just throw the fucking bomb. It was at the very end when they were trying to blow up the dome.
I thought she says goddamn. And they were,
whatever. She cursed is the point I'm making. She cursed, and people were waiting for her to, somebody in the show to swear, and it ended up being Marge. And people were like, yeah, there it is. Just
throw the goddamn bomb.
Did you remember that, or did you Google it?
No, I remembered it. I knew she didn't say fuck.
I kind of wish she did say throw the fucking bomb. That would have been better. But nonetheless, goddamn also worked.
Yeah.
Oh, Simpsons.
I think it is goddamn. I just looked it up on the IMDb.
Throw the goddamn bomb.
The old ticker works a little bit here and there. Not often, but
to be fair, it works when it's Simpsons related, and that's the important part.
God, your brain is the one that runs on Simpsons references.
That is true. Me run on Simpsons? That's impossible.
Anyway, we got some games to talk about. Should we dive into these for the night?
Yes, we should.
Flash.
All right. First game to discuss tonight is Ledger Bound, developed and published by Omni Mega Supercore, released August 11th on Steam for $29.99. The world may end, but more importantly, your job is on the line. Step onto the battlefield, befriend, and maybe fall in love with a ragtag crew of heroes, and go head-to-head against an immortal foe to protect the bureaucratic kingdom you love in this hilarious narrative-driven tactical RPG. Purnell, what is Ledger Bound?
Well, hilarious is 100% right. 100%. Ledger Bound has you playing as a woman by the name of Raina Ashvale. And she is a claims adjuster for a Heroes United Life Group Insurance Agency. This insurance agency covers heroes under a number of different clauses, ensuring that in the event of their untimely passing, their loved ones will get a decent and reasonable payout. However, they are a shady insurance company, so Raina is the star of the show because her whole shtick is that she's very good at running narratives of battles in their head and also on the table, and in order to write it up so that the claim can be denied on account of the heroes screwing up, as opposed to a situation that was out of their control. So fancy this game working out, where they start you out with, you know, getting the hang of the ropes and what her job is, and also leaning you quickly into the humor that the game sets up, only to then lead you into a situation where the three greatest heroes in the land, who they also cover and are the company's bread and butter, get killed on a mission. And it turns out that in the event that they have to pay off the insurance policy for these heroes, they will be out of business, and the shareholders, air quotes, will be very upset. So the team goes off trying to resolve a situation to determine if they can figure out how to make it so that the heroes are at fault. A number of crazy shenanigans occurs. Raina becomes the needed hero, and now they are on a quest to resolve the mission that those three fallen heroes have failed in order to prove that the heroes just didn't properly prepare for the job, thereby saving the land, but more importantly, as you mentioned earlier in the show, saving their company from making a massive payout. So,
of course, the important part.
The important part is saving your money and your job. Right off the bat, the easiest way to describe this game is it's Fire Emblem with lots of humor and a surprising amount of horniness. I think Aki would probably enjoy this game.
I already approve just because you said horniness. I approve wholeheartedly.
I was playing this on a plane. And at one point, I very audibly said that I'm sure the neighbor was like, who? But I was like, Aki would love this. That's what I literally said. Because the game goes through a series of tutorials that teaches you the ropes of the game. And ultimately, the turnings are mandatory in such a way that whether it was patched in later or if it was always that way, the game will actually make things better for you by doing the mandatory trainings. But more importantly than that, the mandatory trainings are hilarious. So it's worth doing them. Your best friend and office love interest is a hat rack an actual hat rack that you talk to when no one's looking. And also when no one's looking, it talks back to you and romances you. It's adorable. I'm trying to think how it's going.
Option.
Oh yeah, you absolutely can romance the hat rack. It's great. Again, it's a fantastic game. The characters.
I feel like we have to play this again. Jacob's dog did not fuck his shoe.
Yeah, but you might be able to fuck a shoe in this game. I can tell you everything. So the game pretty much goes off in a series of battles, you know, typical, you know, battle after battle. And in those fights, your characters get the ability to move and engage in attacks. Some attacks are generally straightforward, as in, like, you know, physical or ranged. Some characters, well, actually every character will get abilities that are unique to them, and you can trigger those abilities instead. For example, a character that might be able to set a trap on the ground for enemies to walk into and take damage. Others that might have, like, fixed damage attacks, heals, you know, the typical stuff. And when you beat up enemies, you'll get experience points. Also, a la Fire Emblem, there is a battle damage triangle based off of fire, water, and plant. You can probably guess what beats what based off of that if you've played any Pokemon. The game will actually let you run through the battles. In the event that you are able to complete the level's objectives, you will get stamps, or tickets, rather. The tickets can be traded in to corporate HR to get company swag that gives you your stat buffs in the game. But funny thing about this game, the way that they engage the battle replay system is that you are able to, at any point during the relaxation, or I can't forget the freaking name they coined for, but basically relaxation sessions or whatever, you're able to replay old battles, and they do it in the manner associated with how Reyna does her usual claims adjusting. So all the characters become cardboard cutouts.
No!
And she ad-libs all the voices from the cutscenes and stuff. It's actually pretty freaking funny.
Hold on a sec. We are getting rated. Bree is rating us.
Why?
A whole bunch
Hi,
of
Bree. How
Welcome
you doing?
In, Bree. Thank you for rating us. It's good to see you Bree, on that Bree side of the screen in. Instead of ours having to put up with us and our shenanigans.
Hey, we like putting up with Bree. She likes putting up with us.
I don't know about that, but sure.
One of the two of those may be correct.
I do, because Bree's awesome. And your faces. like I said, the battles, when you replay them, they're done in this like really funny style in a way that almost makes it worth replaying every battle just to hear Reyna ad-lib all the character voices and such. The game does have a time structure system to it where you are able to, like, based on like who you talk to at the camp to build relationship levels after battles, it determines how much, basically a certain amount of time ticks down in order to do so. And if you run out of time, you're out of time. The game does allow you to turn off the time features if you don't want to deal with time management to talk to people. But being me, I don't know if there's a penalty for that, so I haven't done it. Which means I'm still stuck trying to decide whether Hat Rack is worth talking to or Jazz, the HR Dragon representative. The answer is Jazz. Jazz is awesome. She does a lot of like weird like slang that is well past my time or after my time, but I don't care. She's awesome. The game itself has reasonable difficulties, even though the goals might get pretty complicated later in the game if you want to try to get all of them. I do feel as though the game is very manageable and with the difficulties available, and you shouldn't really get stuck if you don't want to. Hell, if you really want, there's a DLC you can buy that actually gives you an instant win button that pretty much makes the game a pure visual novel. So if you care about the hot innuendos and the character dialogue, which I will reiterate is very good dialogue and a lot of fun, then you should have. But you don't want to deal with the battles. You can just buy the easy auto win button on the supporter pack DLC. The music is fantastic. The character art is very good. I cannot say I'm disappointed in this game. Again, I was laughing audibly out loud on a plane surrounded by people, and I look like a braying hyena, and I did not care. It is worth it. Obviously, humor is subjective, but I'm the reviewer today, and I think the humor is great. So that is to say, again, with all the stuff I said, it literally is Fire Emblem with horniness and humor. that is pretty much the game from a gameplay mechanics perspective. And if that is up your alley, that should have sold you right there. But it's fun. I like it. And you will too, hopefully.
All right. Well, anything else to say about it, or are you ready to talk price?
I guess I should have mentioned the general, like, you know, potential occasional battle mechanics on maps, like the ley lines that let you get stat buffs based on your character type, while you also get weaknesses based on your character type and things like that. But, man, it's what it is. The important part of the game is fun. You should buy it.
Very good. $30. What is your verdict?
Absolute buy it. Get on this train today. Put a stamp of approval on it, even. Very good. Let me phrase it. Do not deny this claim.
Uh-huh.
Buy it today.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah.
All right. Next up, Arcade Archive Cyber Cycles, developed and published by Hamster Corporation. Released August 19th, Xbox Series X and S, Switch 2, and PS5 for $16.99. Cyber Cycles is a racing game released by Namco Limited in 1995. This game featured a large bike-style cabinet design that stood out in the arcades at the time. Set against the backdrop of near-future motorcycle racing, choose from a lineup of unique machines with different performance features and cross the finish line ahead of all your rivals. Jacob, what is Cyber Cycles?
Those Cyber Cycles... is a racing game that Namco released in the mid-90s, and pretty much it's a motorcycle racing game that's dressed up in the biker outfits more closely resemble like Masked Rider or like VR Troopers kind of stuff. Which, what was that?
It was a VR Troopers reference. I used to watch the show.
Oh, I used to too. I actually liked VR Troopers better than Power Rangers.
That's because it was far superior.
Yeah, there was actually like a plot to it. And then of course they ran out of footage, so the main plot never actually got resolved. But anyway, so you're driving around on these motorcycles. There's only two courses in this, which is very similar to Aquajet 2. I'm leaving out. Oh, well, I mean, like, heck, that Armadillo Racing game only had two as well. But anyway, so one of them's a beginner one. The other one's advanced or expert. And there's three different bikes that you could choose from. And it all depends on your handling, your choice of handling. There's like a beginner, an advanced, and like an intermediate one. And you pretty much just hop on your bike and you get going, and like, there is no weapons. There is no boost. It's pretty much just driving based on skill. It handles well. The beginner course is kind of like ho-hum. Like, it's a standard like seat, like mountainside course that like you'll see in plenty of racing games. But the expert or advanced course, that's really where it shines. It's also where you're going to eat shit a lot, because there's a lot of sharp turns. And if you're not using your brake properly, which is like nearly all the time, your character's going to fly off. And the advanced one is very clearly based on like a cyberpunk Neo Tokyo from Akira kind of look. And you know, with the design of the motorcycles, it's impossible to not, like, you know, have like the songs from Akira playing in your head as you're racing. That's pretty cool. One of the things I really enjoyed about it is that you can get kicked off of your motorcycle, which of course is going to eat up some time, but what's really cool is that the game actually lets you aim where your motorcycle's like gonna like finally land. And so if you play your cards right, or I guess aim your motorcycle right, like you could get further on up the track and actually like be in an advantageous part of the track for like when you finally do respawn. I thought that was pretty neat. The AI, I could never really quite get a handle on it. I still have yet to place first in any of the races. The best I could do is second. And it's just like the AI just seems to like constantly like rubber band. No matter like how far ahead you suddenly are, like you'll get close to the finish line and bloop, all of a sudden you're back in third place again. Which creates like, it's frustrating, but like, I just got to the point where I'm just like, all right, I finished second. Like, I'm good. Like, you know, like I'll count it as a win. But yeah, like it's a fun game. Like, I like it. Not as much as like Aqua Jet 2, but like this one's pretty fun to look at. And I wish that there was like some way that like you could just have like a way to just like go through the track, like, and just look at it. Like, you know, just like look at, get like, get a chance to like look at your surroundings, because I'd love to study the advanced track. Like, it's really beautiful to look at. And you could tell that that's really where most of the time got put for it. But
that's what home console releases are for.
Well, yeah, but like it's not like there's a free camera.
Yeah.
But with standard ACA releases, there is, you know, there's the original mode, there is the high score, the caravan, and the time trial ones. And those achievements are fairly easy to get. It's really just the winning in original mode. Like, I'm just like, well, these are achievements I'm never going to get.
Dude, that's how I feel with one of the other games that we got to talk about next episode.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Gets tough.
That's unfortunate.
So what else? That's
unfortunate. By the game, but not.
I mean, like, as I said, like, I mean, oh, also there is a, you can play two player in this. So, there is like a split screen mode for it. So that is nice that it retains some of the arcade-ness to it. I didn't get a chance to play it against my kids, unlike the Armadillo Racing, but there is a couch multiplayer in it, so
that's cool.
Yeah, but yeah, like, you know, it's difficult, but I enjoyed this one. Like, it's real nice to look at, and you know, like as a racing game, you know, it's pretty fun. I just wish I could figure out the enemy, like the other racers' AI.
Yeah, I'm trying to look up some trivia bits on this one, but I'm not really finding too much. The big thing I've seen is that I believe this is the first time it's getting any kind of re-release outside of the arcade.
Nice. Yeah, because honestly, I'm not familiar with this title at all.
Like, yeah.
I don't think I ever saw it in arcades I ever went to.
Yeah, it sounds new to me as well, but it looks pretty cool, and it sounds like it plays pretty well. And, yeah, $17, $16.99. What are your thoughts?
That's a little steep, honestly, for like just two courses.
Same engine as Ridge Racer, and you know, I know.
I enjoyed those games more though. Like, this one's solid. Like, I don't know. It's like, it's solid.
But there's better ones.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. Like, it's just like, I'd be more cool with it if it was like $12 maybe. I mean, it, for the price, I get, like, I like it, but not at that price.
Yeah.
I would recommend like, if it's on sale ever, get it.
I know Hamster doesn't do sales too often. They recently did one that had Ridge Racer as part of it, so I finally got to pick that one up. But hopefully this will be included in a future sale and people could grab it.
Yeah, hopefully. It's definitely worth checking out.
Well, if that one doesn't work, you got another arcade game to talk about with Arcade Archives 2 V-Ball, developed and published by Hamster Corporation. This one came out August 12th on Series X and S, Switch 2, and PS5 for $9.99. V-Ball is an action game released by Technos Japan in 1988. Control two young men as they enter a beach volleyball tournament and aim for the championship. Enjoy a variety of actions such as controlling the ball, where the ball flies during serves and spikes, or delivering a more powerful spike by tapping rapidly. This is the story of their success. The rest of the story is up to you. Jacob, what is V-Ball?
I'm sorry, what year did you say this came out?
88.
You know, it's kind of funny looking back at this game, like, for the time it came out, because you have, like, the obvious homoeroticism of the volleyball scene in Top Gun. And then, did you catch what the name of the two guys are?
No.
George and Michael.
Ah, nice.
Yeah, I mean, years before he came out, but, you know, I'm come just on. Like, huh. But, yeah, so V-Ball has you playing as two guys, George and Michael, who hear about this, like, this huge grand prize for winning this volleyball tournament all over the United States. And hopefully you're going to be able to win this, you know, because you guys are unemployed and you need the money and all that kind of stuff. And you're hoping that this could somehow, you know, shoot you to fame in the world of competitive volleyball. So, yeah, so it's an arcade-ish volleyball game. And one of, like, so many other ACA titles out there, it includes the original Japanese version and the English version. And it's important to note that there is actually differences with it. And some of them are very questionable choices as to, like, why the crap was this not included kind of thing. So the Japanese version is two player. Players could play against each other. And you are controlling both guys on one side of the net. And in the Japanese version, there is a cursor that will highlight which guy is currently being controlled. So you can't mess that up. Okay. So you're understand who is going to be going towards the ball and who you, like, you know, who's going to be doing the actions and stuff like that. And also it only goes up to 7 points. Okay. The American version was suddenly a 4-player game. So you could have, you and three friends could control one guy each as you're going around for the thing. The cursor is suddenly gone. Even if you're playing by yourself, the cursor's just not there. And so if you're playing as the American version, you're now suddenly having to do a guessing game of which guy you're controlling at the time. And that is an absolute bitch. Like, also the scoring now goes up to 10, and it gets real weird with that because how the scoring works is that you have to score to 10, or actually, I don't know what happens if you only score 9 and, like, the other team only has, like, 8 or something like that. I don't think you advance. Like, the game's manual said, like, you had to score 10 or, like, you know, get to the, you know, score as many points as you could. Because even if the game is a tie, you will, like, the game is over and stuff like that. And what I thought was interesting is that you could be losing, like, 9-0. And the game will, if you've run out of time, the game will still offer you the chance of, oh, you could keep playing, you know, just pop in another quarter. And I'm like, why? You're going to lose if they score one more point. And the controls for this game, I mean, they make sense, but it is so damn hard to judge, like, first off, who's going to be running for the ball. And second, like, if you're trying to, like, time up, like, a power shot, like, you know, instead of, like, the simple, you know, normal, like, bump, you know, you have to do, like, 3 bumps before you, or, like, 2 bumps and then, like, you know, hit it over. If you're going to try to do a power shot or try to block, like, there is no reasonable way for you to figure out where your guy is going to be lined up. And of course, because this is an arcade game and they want to eat all your quarters, there's no practice. There's no, like, real good instruction on it. And so this game ends up just being super fucking frustrating. Like, I hated every single moment that I was playing this, because it's just like, I could not figure out where my guy needed to be. And if I was playing this in the arcade, I would have walked away after losing my first quarter, like, to this. Nah. Like, it's just like it has potential. Like, it really does. But like just the American version that you get, like they that got released in arcades. It's just like I could see why this never caught on. Like it's just
is it better playing the Japanese version in the game?
I mean, it ends sooner. Because it only goes up to 7. It's easier because you know who's going to go for the ball or who's responsible for it. But still, timing up power shots, like, you know, having to like leap up in the air and hit it, like just timing, figuring out where the heck your sprite is actually supposed to be for that. Like, it's just ridiculous. I just wish that there was a better way to get it done in this game. Cause how it's released, like, it's just, this ain't it.
Also, you mentioned the differences between the Japanese and the American versions. The American version, which was named US Championship V-Ball, removed cutscenes that you would get in between matches. So it removed sense of story progression that the Japanese version had.
See, the thing is that I didn't know about the cutscenes because...
You suck.
Yeah, I suck. And I never got to move past the first match. Damn. Like, I have yet to win one. And I'm just like, yeah, no. Like, this is... As I said, if I had played this in the arcade, I would have been done after I lost my first quarter.
All right, well, $10 on this one. Need a verdict.
If you're a completionist for the ACA series, or you somehow have fond memories of this game from back in the day, which I also question what was considered fun in your childhood, then go for it. But otherwise, this is a miss for me. Like I would pass. Sorry, I was not a fan of this one at all.
All right. And then we got one more, but we'll discuss that on the next episode. That is it for you, Jacob. We will let you get going. Do you have any final words before you take off?
Keep playing video games.
Okay, we will. Bye. He's gone, right?
He is gone.
Okay, cool. Next up, Box Knight, developed and published by We Made a Thing Studios, released August 25th on Steam for $14.99. Fight, die, repeat, become the Box Knight and brawl through a monster-infested office, floor by floor, boss by boss, in this irreverent action roguelite. Purnell, what's Box Knight?
It's a irreverent action roguelite.
Cool.
That was fast.
Yeah it was. $15, verdict. No.
Oh, yeah. So, Box Knight, you play as basically an office employee that you lightly customize at the beginning of the game. You basically choose gender and color. But at the same time, at least you get in quick and snappy. You work in an office. The office is overrun by overwork, burnout, and stress, which result in a number of employees/coworkers or whatever taking on the embodiment of a number of different demons and monsters based off of various types of, I guess you'd call them like sins or sloths, like elements of sloth and just like whatever. They're demons essentially. And you have to purge them from the office and bring back the light that makes working fun. When you find that light, please let me know, because I would like my job to be fun too. You know, side note, I do like my job, but work's still not fun. Whether I like my job or not, it's irrelevant. It's not fun. The idea here is that you get slapped into the middle of the break room, essentially, where all of your upgrade environments are stationed at, and a couple of your good coworkers that are not completely burnt out, and you are tasked with adventuring into the realm. One more thing before the game starts proper. You have to choose which previous Box Knight employee you want to follow in the footsteps of, and that determines pretty much the elemental skill path you are going to follow on the upgrade tree. There's fire, ice, and electricity. Now, back to the other thing. You go into the level proper. And now this game is a roguelike, so what happens is you'll go from floor to floor, each floor representing a different area of the office, and you'll be tasked with going from room to room on that floor, beating the stuffing out of monsters. Now, you'll enter a room, enemies will spawn. In the event that one spawns that is new, the game will give you a little wacky primer on, like, oh, this monster is based off of this, and he has a bucket on his head. Ground pounds don't work. Do something else. It's like, okay. So they give you an idea of how monsters work, so you're not, like, blindsided on new enemies. Your basic moves are to swing your weapon, jump, the aforementioned ground pound, which does, like, around the area of effect damage for people, but it has a slight cooldown. You can dash, and you can do what's called an execution attack, which is built up by hitting enemies over and over again without getting hit until you fill a gauge, and it's pretty much an instant kill on one enemy that is not a boss. When you enter a room and the enemy spawn, you have a certain amount of time to defeat them. And by that, I'm not saying the timer is ticking for you to die. I'm saying the timer is ticking for you to get a good ranking. The better you do and quicker you defeat enemies, the better you rank in on a level. And every time you defeat a room full of enemies with a good rank, you get to choose from a number of upgrades to apply to your character. The upgrade skill tree looks similar to what it did in Castle Crashers, with a multitude of different stats and squares representing upgrades in each one. There are also upgrades in the form of, like, burning and freezing and jolting enemies, and the amount of the frequency in which it occurs when you do so, and so on and so forth. And of course, you'll earn basic upgrade currency in this manner as well. Sometimes you'll come across a coworker in a room. If you do, you will be given the opportunity to either A, get an experience buff going from room for the next couple of rooms. So if you want to get level ups quicker, which is an overarching carryover between runs, mind you, you can do that. Or you can use the opportunity to gain back one more bottle of beer, soda. I'm not quite sure what the liquid is, but you're drinking it, and it heals you when you drink it. Consider like an Estus flask in the Souls games, essentially. At the end of a four, you will take on a boss. If you defeat the boss, you are able to advance to the next floor and continue onward. If you die, you go back to the start, where you will then be able to spend currency you've earned on the previous run, whether it be through leveling up or by completing quests that the janitor offers you for different runs on upgrades, whether they be stat-based related things on a skill-based stat tree, or to acquire new weapons that you can equip at the equipment area, as well as helmets and armor. These things, of which giving you various buffs, like an additional buff to how much HP you start with. That's the one I mainly did work with. It was the banana outfit, banana hat, banana pants. I'm a banana man. And both the helmet and the banana pants gave me buffs to my HP, which is what I really wanted. But there's also things like crit buffs. The shark outfit is like crit buffs. And it's also one of the most expensive non-quest reward equipments you can get. And there's also a horde mode you can unlock once you get to a certain level, but primarily the game says a story mode where you're going to the top of the building in hopes of defeating all the different, you know, department heads and saving the company. The game itself is enjoyable. It doesn't do anything that hasn't been done before in this concept, though the humor is pretty funny. The main hiccup I have about it, which is a take it or leave it sort of thing, is that it always felt like there was some sort of slight, like, lagginess in the inputs. What do I mean by that? Best way to put it is, I don't think of your favorite beat 'em up and how responsive attacks are. If you got a reflected attack to an enemy and it's like hit the button at the right time to send the attack back, you almost can always time it. It just feels smooth. You hit it, boom, your attack, boom, it goes back. This game, I feel like it's like a 50-50 shot whether or not I'm going to pull it off or not. Now, I'm not saying the controls are sluggish. I'm saying the game was built in this manner specifically, which means they could also tweak it if they really wanted to. But I just felt like there was a number of times where the responsiveness wasn't what I wanted. Like, the jumping feels floaty, for example. It doesn't feel like I jump and come down. It's like jump and then come down, which is cartoony, but it's not particularly snappy in a beat 'em up where I feel like reaction times matter. So that is to say, I'm not going to sit here and tell you I hated the game or I was bored stiffless or that I just didn't like it, because none of those things are true. But I am going to tell you that is an element of the game that I know would turn a number of people off when you're being told you're playing a roguelike beat 'em up, or more specifically, just a beat 'em up. So something to factor into your take on this. But other than that, I think the game is perfectly fun to play. It has a co-op mode if you want to go at it with a friend. and it hits the nose that I feel like if you want to get down for like a little quick beat 'em up action here and there, and you've knocked that, you've beaten the stuff out of Absalom, and you just want something else that involves roguelike beat 'em up antics, you could do worse.
All right. Well, let's talk price on this one. It's $15, $14.99. What are your thoughts on Box Night?
I think it is a solid try at time. If the things you heard about me talking about the irreverent office humor and, you know, the occasional one more run antics that you could feel if the, you know, the sluggishness of the controls don't really get to you, I think you'll have fun with this. So I think it's worth trying.
Very good. Let's move on to Entropy, developed by Lovely Hell Place, published by Dread XP. Released August 18th, Steam Early Access for $11.99. Entropy is a tactical turn-based RPG inspired by classic JRPGs. Assemble your party of mercenaries and forge your own path towards an expedition into hell to stop the demonic incursion. Choices you make along the way will determine the fate of your world. Aki, what is Entropy?
Entropy is the heat death of the universe.
But
in this context, it is a turn-based RPG where you play as one of three characters, all of whom are part of this troupe that does plays and stuff. And each one, basically, it's pick a gender. There's a guy, a girl, and then a third option of something that's unique to this universe. God damn
it. Oh my god, you did it. You did it. You did it.
I hate my life and I hate myself. And everything about my existence is now terrible and horrific, and I hate you. And each one has their own benefits. Like the girl is agile. The guy, I think, is supposed to be either strong or has courage, something like that. And the third one is magical or some shit. And then you get to choose some other stats for your character, which just boosts those stats at the very beginning for you, so you know what weapon you're going to be using. I chose ranged, because why the fuck wouldn't I? You get besieged by demons, and all you have are prop weapons. But the guard has decided you're going to help anyways. They don't give a shit if all you have is a prop, because fuck you, they need help, and you're an extra body that they can throw at monsters. Well, it goes about as well as you would expect for having a prop weapon. And you come back to life a little later on.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. So this now becomes your little quest to basically do what people tell you to do. You go various places, people ask you for help or tell you what to go do, and then you just go do them. And that eventually entails you deciding that you need to wipe out all of the demons. Woohoo! And your first start is that you're going to find some people in town and you can decide whether you're going to keep them around or not. You have some individuals that will join your group and they'll stick with you and they won't cost you anything. But then there's also mercenaries that you can find in various places, and a lot of them you can just outright fucking hire, and they cost actually some of the money. And if you're hiring them, they cost money when you buy them, and they also take some of the spoils of the battle. And you can actually have enough mercenaries on you to where you get no money, and you have to give them some of the money you already had. Don't be a poor bitch, is my suggestion, because if you're a poor bitch, you're fucked. There are a multitude of different weapons here. They all come with their own special attacks. There's some level ups that you can get. I think you can probably get to around like level 20-ish or something would be my guess. It allows you to put some points into various stats, be it like, oh, this is the stat that allows you to do more damage with your melee and range. This stat allows you to have more health. This stat helps you with courage, which is something that protects you from some status effects and stuff. It does have a couple interesting little mechanics to it. If a character is beaten the fuck out of and they go into the death state, they might just die and permanently be gone from your inventory, from your party forever, because they have kicked the bucket and you can go fuck yourself.
Permanent.
Yeah. There's also a chance that they might survive, but then they become injured. And an injury is, oh, suddenly they're missing a limb or something, and that affects their stats pretty heavily negatively. You can fix that by going and finding a doctor and paying a fuck ton of money to get that fixed, but that's the only way to fix it. You can get, like, HP back and stuff from, like, resting, but that won't heal their injury. Which is all pretty awesome. So I think there's another stat that also increases the likelihood of them not dying, if you want to put points into that, if you find somebody that you really like. And yeah, you're going around this big place. You can find various areas. After you leave the initial area, you see like a big map that you walk on, like some of the old RPGs out there, and occasionally you'll get into a random battle while in this area, but you also travel to different locations on it. Some of them are named locations that you actually get to enter, like other cities, forests where you have objectives to do, stuff like that. But there's also little areas that you can see on the map that you walk into, and it gives you like a visual novel style little bit of story. And then it gives you an option of what you want to do, and that can determine what you get from the situation, if anything, which is really interesting. Like, there was one right outside the town that was like, oh, teeth are falling from the sky or some weird shit like that. And you have a choice of sticking it out. And you have a choice of running off and getting out of the forest to save yourself from having to deal with that crap. And each choice, one might get you something, and the other choice might get you something completely different. It could be money, experience, no health lost, an item, things like that, which is pretty interesting. You can only do it once, though, so make sure you choose the choice you really want. Otherwise, you're going to get fucked. Enemies don't respawn like I think they're supposed to. Because the game tells you, hey, yeah, if you rest, you'll get your health back, but enemies will respawn. And then I rested specifically so they would respawn, and then I went to areas where I had wiped people out and there wasn't anyone there. I was like, oh, well then. So I don't know if that's broken or if there's just some access, scripted areas.
Early access has all these wonderful issues and bugs that can pop up. The beautiful thing is it's still in very early. Well, I don't know if it's very early, but it's still in early development, and they're... It's what, act one out of three acts the game is going to be?
I think so. But it's interesting. It also has a magic system that is really weird. You get different items that can be like a focus, a magical focus. In other words, something that you need in order to pull magic out of the world or whatever. And there's a couple different types, and each type will actually give you access to different chunks of magic, which is interesting. Otherwise, they're not super useful in and of themselves beyond giving you the ability to cast magic, and sadly can't have one character hold both items, which is very upsetting for me, because I don't want to have a bunch of mages in my party just because I'd rather them shoot people. But you have weapons from daggers, short swords, spears, great swords, to just outright fucking guns, which is what my character's been using because it's fun. And yeah, you can fail quests by doing things out of order and the like. So also be prepared for that. I'm pretty sure there are also some timed ones where if you go to certain areas, it will just outright fail it because you didn't do something before you got there. Not like it's like, oh, you have 30 minutes to do this. No, it's like a locational timer type thing. You got to this location and now you can't go back and do this other thing anymore because you just went too far. And yeah, it's really interesting, and I'm pretty sure they're going to expect you to have to play through this few times to see everything, because there is a fucking lot there.
No, it's supposed to be a fairly large game. Do you really think they're going to focus on replayability, or do you think it's just going to be like focusing on exploring everything?
You're going to want to explore everything, but it's definitely going to want you to replay, because you're definitely not going to be able to see everything, because there's so much, and so many of the options are binary or trinary even, that they're definitely going to be like, yeah, you're going to want to replay this and try some other options and see what's going on, because there's a great, amazing thing where they don't give you a manual save. It just auto-saves. So, yeah, replay.
Yeah, I see manual saving is something that people are asking for on the Steam discussions. The game is in early access right now. It is $12. We're going to be talking about this one more on a future episode. We'll be chatting with one of the devs. But for $12 in early access, what are your thoughts on this one right now?
I think it's pretty good. If you like, you know, turn-based RPGs, I think this is a pretty solid choice. It's been really enjoyable for me.
And the price will go up as they release more content and features. So get in while the going is cheap.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Next up is Dream Cards, developed by Seneca Games, published by Seneca Games and Visu Games. Released August 19th on Steam for $9.99, a roguelike deck builder about dreams. Choose cards by combining 6 different strategies during the day, and at night, build your deck while facing the nightmare to uncover a great mystery. Purnell, what is Dream Cards?
Well, before that, I just want to point out that Aki is totally earning that tagline on those shirts. Get printing. Nailed it. As for the game itself, what is Dream Cards? Well, in this game, you play as an individual. You're like a nameless person, and you are engaging in night after night of dreams. And in these dreams, you are also being accosted. I'm going with that. Leave me alone. By a monster, referred to as the monster. And you have to make it so that you, by the end of the night, have a lucid, positive dream as opposed to a negative, awful nightmare. The game flow is as follows. Beginning of a day, or rather during the day of a day, you will have some dialogue choices, or rather some choices, referring to how you chose to spend your day. Did you spend the day with your sibling or your mother? Listen to your grandfather or play games with your best friend? Those things will determine the source of cards that will make up your dream deck. In other words, just like with any person, the things you dream about are usually influenced by the way you spent your day or events you experienced throughout the day. This game does similar. After you've answered a number of these questions, and each of the cards referring that you gain from these cards referring to a specific type of gameplay style or whatever, you will then proceed to enter the dream. The gameplay flow in this game, unlike a lot of deck builders of that sort, is that rather than just, you know, play cards and trigger effects to just, I don't know, I'm trying to think of what I mean, they're like defeat monsters or whatever. The way this game works, you're actually having a bit of a tug of war with this monster. There's a grid that has like a positive 10 end and a negative 10 end of it. If by any point in time that grad or that scale reaches a negative 10, you immediately lose. If it reaches positive 10, you immediately win. How do you make it go up? Well, the cards that you can acquire in this game cover a variety of different types. This might seem weird, but it should sound weird because there's a lot of interesting terminology in this game. and I'm not going to use the different terms that they use for the different resources and deal with it, because I'm terrible with these kinds of things. There are character cards, and the character cards come in two types. There is the main character card, being you, and that defines different effects to your game based on how you play certain cards. There are also other character cards, like sub-character cards. These are people that you associate with, or types of entities you associate with, and they can be used to also trigger effects. But unlike your card, they have a certain number of turns that are allowed to be on the field before they disappear. The next types of cards you'll get are, let's call them, I guess, like, I'm just going to call them action cards. Screw it. You get action cards. The action cards in this game require a specific resource for playing them. And in addition to that, some of them require more than one character to be allowed to be played. And they represent, I guess, like elements of existence, like a conversation or a bickering argument or storytelling. So, for example, if you want to play the argument card or the bickering card, you got to have two characters so they can have, you know, so they can bicker. And then you have to have the means of which to play it, which is the cost resource to do so. If you're able to play that card, you'll get the beneficial results that come from it. You might gain two more resources for playing more cards, or you might get the Venus resource. Ha, I have to remember that one. The Venus resource, and the Venus will allow you to draw more cards. So now you can play more things. You will also be able to occasionally get cards that will produce resources for purchasing things. That's the moon resource. The more moon cards you have in your hand by the turn, the more moon coins you have to spend for shopping for cards at the end of the round. In addition to that, there are also ego cards that represent the resource that I mentioned earlier in the 20-point scale. And they pretty much glut your deck. If you've ever played the tabletop game Dominion, think of that as like estates and, you know, provinces and such. They are needed to win the game, but while you have them, they just take up space as well. So it's a bit of a tug-of-war balancing act there. Now, at the end of a round, like I mentioned before, you can use the moon currency you built up to buy new cards. The cards you can buy are either more moon cards, more ego cards, or you can buy more character cards. And you're going to want a bunch of those, because a large part of what makes this game tick is playing the right action cards with the right character or characters to use their effects to kind of cycle your deck. For example, again, you might be able to play an action card with the right character, and now it normally would have given you two actions and a draw, but now this doubles the actions you get from it. So now you get four actions. So hot diggity dog. Worthy to do that there, making sure that you are able to use them to the most before you run out of turns and they disappear. After you played all your cards and also purchase what you can purchase that turn, again, moon currency being the amount you can spend, and there's like another symbol that determines how many purchases you can actually make, it is then the monster's turn to act. The monster will add some chips to the negative side of the scale, and then it'll be your turn. As the turns progress, though, the monster will get progressively stronger, adding more and more negativity to the scale until eventually, if you don't manage to win on time, he's just going to straight up outpace you, and he's going to cause you to have a nightmare, and bam, you are done. There's a lot of rambling I just did there, and that's fine, because that's kind of how I felt when I did the tutorial. I was like, what the hell? I don't know the... It's like, I know these things in general, but in the execution of the game, I didn't feel like remembering the Mars symbol, and the Venus symbol, and the Saturn symbol, and the Neptune symbol. I didn't care. Once the game gets going, they do a really good job of explaining what the different cards do. You'll get quickly used to the fact that X symbol does Y thing. You'll get used to understanding the different synergies of the cards, because, again, by playing a good deck builder, which, spoiler, this game is good. I do like it. The game will intuitively start to click with you, and it will begin to make sense. And next thing you know, you're going to be kicking the demon's ass or the monster's ass and moving from night to night, getting more cards, having more adventures and days, and expanding on your life with your family experiences and such, which is ultimately what I think is coolest about this game. The fact that, yeah, you could min-max the game and go, well, clearly grandpa cards are better than best friend cards, but you know what? I want to determine what my day was like. Yeah, every time my mom up on the game, did you spend time with your mom? You're damn right I spend time with my mom. I don't even care what the cards do. I just want to spend time with my mom. And then I spend time with my sibling. And then I have a nice dream. with cards that are influenced by my mother and my sibling. It's just a fun aspect of the game. I think it's fun, a fun way to integrate storytelling into gameplay. And it's not just a visual novel in that sense. I think the theme is very unique for this kind of game. I can't think of a deck builder that utilizes dream building and dreamscapes for a deck building play. I'm sure it exists. Someone can tell me, but I can't recall it. And we get tens of deck building games every month. I'm positive of that. So kudos to the development team for coming up with that. Without going into another bit of a rambling fit, I do want to say that I think this game is a lot of fun. I like the upgrade or the new cards you unlock and the new experiences you can have on future, you know, day buildings by running through runs and losing. The game gives you a lot to build off of and have new runs and experiences from those. The only thing my regret is here to this game is that I needed to work on a freaking Steam Deck. This game would be perfect on Steam Deck. Now I know how you feel when you say it should be on Xbox. Yeah, it should be on Steam Deck. I played it on my laptop, and yes, it runs fine there, but it'd be even better if I was playing it on my Steam Deck. So please figure out why I can't download it on my Steam Deck so that hopefully other people can play it on their Steam Decks. But even if you can't play it on Steam Deck, if you're a person that wants to play it on their desktop, laptop, or no, their laptop or their desktop, you can't go wrong here. This game is a lot of fun, and I recommend it wholeheartedly.
Very good. It clocks in at $10. What is your verdict?
Easy buy it recommendation. Get in and have some good dreams.
Monster Bring it can't to Xbox, win. Right?
Yeah, I guess so. Steam Deck first.
One final game to talk about tonight is called Poppergeist, developed and published by Serenity Forge. It released August 20th. Is Xbox Play Anywhere for $4.99. Play as Clara, a witch who journeys into the mysterious doggy underworld with one simple goal, finding her lost pup. As you travel through doggy underworld, you uncover countless souls, each with a story to tell. Share moments with them, play together, and listen to their heartfelt tales. Use your sense of rhythm to lift their spirits and ease their troubles, bringing you one beat closer to reuniting with your own lost pup. Aki, what is Poppergeist?
Okay, in this, you play as a young witch, and you have gone to the underworld, basically, because your dog has passed the point of living, and you're determined to go find your doggo and apologize for being a useless shit or something, I guess. And, yeah, you end up meeting a demon who is living there just protecting the doggos, which is odd, but I will accept it. And you are trying to find your dog with their help, and that requires you to go and talk to all these other dogs and interact with the other dogs, and every last one of them has a little thing for you to do at the time, and all of those things just happen to be a bunch of rhythm games. So I was what we would call less than good at this.
Mm-hmm.
Because I ain't got no rhythm to save my fucking life. And there's like 11 or 12 different missions in this game, something like that. Each beating each one just gives you an achievement. That's what all the achievements are for. It's nice, it's easy, it's quick, providing you have rhythm. If you don't, then it sucks to be me, and maybe you as well. You have to do lots of different little minigames, one for each level. They're all slightly different. They all do rely on, obviously, doing things in rhythm. But they go anywhere from playing tug-of-war with a dog, and you have to pull at the right time, to cutting a dog's hair, and the hair pops up at different times, and you have to cut it to the beat that it came out on, and things of that nature. They are difficult. There's at least three different ways of beating the, or ways of completing the level, I guess we'll say. There's woof, which is you fucked up so bad that if you haven't already beaten the level, you're not continuing until you get better than that. There's good boy, which means You got through the level just well enough that you can now move on to the next level. And then there's Top Dog, which basically requires you to have hit every last one of the things properly, which I've gotten like twice, maybe three times. So I've done not terrible, but I also got stuck and couldn't continue. I found that some of these levels don't really seem to care about player input as much. Some of them also are timed awkwardly, where like there's the tug of war one, for instance. You have to pull at just the right time, but it isn't properly on beat. You have to pull before it, which becomes a problem because you're supposed to do it on beat, and when it decides it's not on beat anymore, then it screws everything up. And so on and so forth. It's most levels are generally, you know, once you find a problem, you can figure it out and you can continue. Because if you fail, you can restart it and everything's the same. So you just have to figure out section after section, if need be, to get it finished. It just didn't help that my controller's A button is kind of sticky, and that's the button you need, so sometimes I'd push the button and it just kind of stayed pushed in, and that screwed everything up a lot. And that's really it. It's pretty short. There's only like 11 or 12 missions in it, and they're all like maybe a couple minutes long a piece, if that.
All right, well, it's $5. What do you think?
If you like rhythm games, this is an easy buy. If you don't like rhythm games, I don't think this is really going to change your mind. It may be cute, but it's surprisingly difficult.
All right. And with that, we are done. That is it for this episode. We made our way through... big thanks to Jacob for coming on, doing his thing. Thanks to you too for being here, hanging out the whole time. Anyone have any final words to wrap this up?
Oh no, I'm probably just sleeping. Also, obviously, you know, rest in peace to the Dolly Parton, of course. Slap that in.
That news sucked.
Yes, it did. The closest I've come to really like being like, okay, you know, this country music, it's all right. Like, I used to drive by her billboard every day on the way home from work because it was advertising how, like, you know, her book program was, like, helping out our libraries locally and stuff like that. So it was like, oh, man, that sucked to see. It's definitely a sad loss as a whole, I think. So, but rest in peace to Dolly Parton.